asked me to speak on a subject. It was particularly the subject that made me immediately respond, and also in the email it said I could be deliberately provocative. That was a common get opportunity when you're on the platform, although I normally take the opportunity if I'm not asked. But what I would say is, the issue that we're seeking to discuss today is Scotland's shame. Let's be quite clear. This is Scotland's shame. That we have such a wealthy country, a country with such talent, and such a proud history in education, and yet we still have such inequity in the system. It is a disgrace. And actually, it's in that context that I will be making some remarks later, but I want to start on a positive. I do believe this matter can be addressed. I believe it's within our belief, it's within our power to address it. It's a question of will and belief. In relation to, do we have anywhere in the system where it's working? Well, we know we've got 32 authorities, and we know we've got in every single authority and in every single bit of the country, whether it's in the leafy suburbs or whether it's in affluent areas or not, in every single area of the country we have inequity. In every school we have it. But we do have bits of the system bucking the trend, and there's certain evidence to support why it is bucking the trend. An anecdote. My grandfather's brother, age 14, I have it in the house, a thesis he wrote, and a letter to Glasgow University on a thesis on organic chemistry. I think it passed for second year chemistry these days, begging them to take him on to Glasgow University, only to get a rejection letter, because he had no one to sponsor him and to help him get to Glasgow University. And so he went down the pit like everybody else, age 14. His brother was my grandfather, and he also went down the pit, age 14. But unbelievably, he came out of the pit, and despite the great financial disbenefit to the family, and my father speaks about it, and I often tell him about just what the cost it was, went on, got his physics degree, and got his medal, and came in and became principal teacher of physics. I don't forget that. That was a generation that had to fight to get its way. I'm a generation that got it all in play. Opportunities just came. Family interests and education just came. And I suspect I'm speaking to an audience that would probably be true of you. Maybe there's one or two here, and that would be a bit different. But there is still a large number of children in the Scottish system for whom that is not the case. And we all know that, and that's why we're here. 9 years ago, I became head of education in Fife, and I was aware of pockets of places, teachers, classrooms, even bits of schools, never a complete school yet, but places where there was definitely bucking the trend. And one of the issues was this is a pure pedagogy-related project, was how were we teaching the issue of reading and writing in the early years. The growing up in Scotland, of course, had just begun. We've now got many, many years of longitudinal study in that. We're well to know that between the ages of 3 and 5, there'd be 18 months of difference that we now know, but we certainly knew there was a difference. We began to look at just the craft of teaching reading and looking at letter recognition and phonics and things of that nature in those very early years. 9 years ago, we saw the beginnings of something that began to happen, and we stuck at it, and we stuck at it, and we stuck at it. And you know, that one project was called the Workshop for Literacy Project. That one project, 9 years on, is beginning to reap tremendous benefit. And it does show children in the areas that have been mentioned, in the area of social disadvantage in particular, a very substantial improvement in the literacy levels. It's not a flat, it's still an unfairness, but there's a most distinct improvement across the board, and a beginning to be a levelling of the bar. That's a project that I've seen. And I've seen with my own eyes, and I've got evidence to say it works. It was relating to the craft of teaching. I'm going to come back to that. There's another project I've seen working. It's a much more like a GIRFED project. It related to the fact that if we're ever going to address this issue in Scotland, we can't walk up to the door called home and walk away again. We've got to walk through it. Because just on Sunday, my daughter, she's studying for her advanced biology, and she was studying with a book wrote, and she says, "Dad, what's the difference between causation and correlation?" And I know if you've got a daughter that's that to you, right? But that's what my daughter did to me on Sunday. She said, "Mother, advanced biology." And I was thinking, well, no, that question is precisely why I only speak today. Because you see, there is a correlation between poverty and achievement outcomes and life destinations. There is. But there's not a causation. And parenting is one of the causes, the way we bring up children in the world, whether they're loved and cared for, whether they're safe, whether people make them believe, but they don't know they believe, how many times they're told that they can do it, and opportunities and wisdom and discernment and all the other things that go into raising a family. And so if we're not prepared to go through the door called home, then we'll never, ever challenge the issues in the Scottish context. There was a programme in Fife, and it did go through the door called home. And some of you have been involved in Incredible Years, Millibumps, and other things that are happening in the early years area. I got involved in it. And we've got a programme that we've been running for 6 years in this area. And there's been a very, very, very significant improvement in the literacy levels of youngsters ages 6 and 7. In terms of SDQs, in terms of their own feelings about themselves, a very significant improvement. And I have testimonies of parents who are prepared to admit, you know what, they didn't quite know how to bring up the child. Right, all of us as parents, I think at some point, must have those sort of reflections. But what I mean is, these are very parents who, and I'm sure you would use different words at times, have been struggling, really struggling, just holding it together. And it's begun to work, it's begun to work. And there's a definite bucking of the trend. Have we made a flat line, Bill? Have we improved the life chances of the children? Yes, we have. When I first became the Executive Director of Education and Children's Services, I ate my dinner in every single children's home in Fife with the Chief Social Work Officer. I learned more doing that than all the statistics was ever placed in front of me. Because out of every 6 children that sat around the table when I was having a tea with them, 2 of them would always have an additional support need. I learned there and then that whilst people were putting in front of me about who was entering up into our negative destinations, it was quite clear who it was. They had missed at least one day more of school than others. They were twice as likely to come from a Sim 1, Sim 2 year, and were twice as likely than any other child to have an additional support need. I knew that in their secure provision they were twice as likely. And now I found in their children's home, they were 2 out of every 6 had some form of additional support need. It was quite clear that families that had children with disability were finding it hard to stick together. Sometimes the marriage was falling apart, and the casualties of this were sometimes children were ending up in our secure accommodation or in residential areas or in very expensive provisions, not necessarily meeting their needs, by the way. So we started, because we had both the education lever and we had the social lever, looking at a 24/7 package of those families with the most significant disability. I've not yet seen the evidence of whether it's working. I've only got anecdotal feedback, don't know. But you know, if I believe I was still in this job a few years down the line, I think it would have an impact. That's the gut feel I've got for everything I'm saying. So, I'm not standing up here to say that it can't be done. I'm saying there are things we can do, but I'm going to be quite provocative, as I was asked to do that now. I believe if we're ever going to see system improvement across Scotland in this area, then certain things have got to get real. You see, one thing you wouldn't do, what you wouldn't do if you're really interested in having more equitable Scotland is, you wouldn't disrupt professional learning. I've just given you a project in pedagogy, and I do believe it's making a difference getting teachers to think together and reflect deeply about the craft of teaching. You would design into your systems opportunities for teachers to reflect on that. You wouldn't make it impossible by having some terms and conditions at 22.5 hours and put schools on at 25. You would design into your systems opportunities for professional learning. You wouldn't focus on inputs. You wouldn't have a complete preoccupation with PDR. You wouldn't have a complete focus on inputs. No, you'd focus on outcomes. You would actually not have the rhetoric, but the belief and the passion to make a difference. Not some sort of belief that we need a fairer Scotland, but something that's underpinned by policy. You see, the question for me is one, are we ready for the change? Most of us now, I'm speaking for myself, fairly middle class family with plenty of opportunity for our children, are we ready for a different tax regime? Are we ready for the fact that there might be slightly less advanced hires and much more provision for employability all the way through the system? Are we ready for it? Or are we not, as a society? Are we ready for the significant differences it would make to have a fairer system? Are we ready to skew the resources we need to sleep? Or are we going to keep a focus on inputs and a focus on resources? Is it all going to be about class size and number of schools? Or is it going to be about the fact that there's a generation of children growing up right now in Scotland whose life outcomes are very different to your families? That's the issue that's in front of us here. It is within our brief. It's a question of belief and willpower. Ladies and gentlemen, it's a privilege to speak on this topic. I hope I provoke you into discussion. I do believe there's solutions out there. Let's make sure they happen in our country. Thank you.
It's about how we change the bill of fare, but how we change what we offer in schools. It now needs to be much more appropriate for all learners. There needs to be appropriate choices for all learners, and not just more of the same academic fare. I want to talk about widening achievement with my Youth Link Scotland hat on. I hear about, and I know about, the Saltire Awards, the John Muir Awards, the SQA Leadership Awards, the Duke of Edinburgh Awards, and all the other options that are available across Scotland. I see that at a very high level, but often when I speak to schools, they talk about other schools doing them, or them not doing it, or actually closer to home, I'm going to tell you a story. I'm the chairman of a local scout group, and I've got young guys that are doing, that with the Cubs and the Beavers are doing all these kind of things. And I said to them, look, you go back to school because you're doing an enormous amount of volunteering, and there's volunteering awards for you. You should be speaking to the school. So they came back, I saw them, maybe saw them 2 or 3 months later. I said, how did you go on in the school? Have they put you in for these things? Now these aren't the words, I guarantee these aren't the words the school teacher said. This is what these young guys said. They said, oh no, no Joe. They said, the school does these things, but they only do that for fit kids. So they only do volunteering and group work and all these other, that's for fit kids. There's still bits in the system that are right. Other bits, and against the Youth Link Scotland hat on, do you know how hard it is for a community to group that could do lots of things for your learners? In lots of places, this is not speaking from all of Scotland, but in lots of places, how hard it is for community groups and things to get notices outside the school? It's really hard. Even when they're offering free opportunities of foreign travel and lots of other things that are all sponsored, lots of things where the school might not have the money for it, but there are other sources of funding. And there's other groups doing really interesting things. Often it's quite hard actually to say to schools, we can take some, we can do more with you in partnership. Schools are also in the new inspection framework. Schools are to be judged as part of a community learning experience. You need to think about how good you are at reaching out into the community, and also how confident are you about letting the community into your school. And again, back to experience in Glasgow. I worked in schools where there were signs of parents weren't allowed in the school without a note, because they were worried about letting parents into the school. That's changed too. I'm still not sure that community groups and things are all moving in and out of all our schools as much as they want to be. In terms of the offerings you've got in place, there's Skills for Work programmes now. There's school-college partnerships. There's a whole range of things that schools should be doing to switch learners on. Not just to the academic stuff, but to the world of work. Foundation apprenticeships are rolling out just now, and I've got some concerns about them, I'll mention them, but foundation apprenticeships, in theory, are a superb idea. Funded in 6 key industries, children and young people, construction, engineering, energy, engineering, financial services, social services and healthcare, business services, software development, hardware and system support. They're developed with industry. They have a big industry placement in part of them. They would be great for learners that have got some national 4s or some national 5s, want to stay at school, but want to get a good experience with a college and with an employer, so it's a pathway to a job for them. Only wee bit I've got a concern about with them is we all thought they were going to be SCGF level 6, National 5 level. Just at the last minute, the government twitched and said, no, they have to be higher level, they have to be SCGF 6. So I think the level's not quite right. But the idea is absolutely right. And I think the other thing for schools is really about how you build that partnership between school and employers. It's hard for schools to build a partnership between school and employer. Use your colleges. Colleges have got superb links with industry, all levels, small employers, large employers. Again, another bit of my career, and I think I still am, I've been on the board of a lot of colleges. One of the things that I never actually achieved, much to my chagrin, was actually not to have an in-service day for school teachers in the college. I can't speak to local authority and do all these things and say, look, we'll give all the teachers a free lunch. Next time you've got an in-service day, don't have it in your schools. Come to the college. Teachers will only believe how colleges transform learners. They actually wander around and they see all the wonderful things that are going on. They see the equipment. They see the links with industry. They might see that learner who had his head on, or she had her head on backwards when she was at school. And suddenly there they are. They're busy doing something like cutting somebody's hair or doing something really responsible. Or working with heavy equipment or doing all... Because they all can do it. They all can do it if you believe and you give them something they really want to do. There's also other choices in that catalogue. There's professional development awards, and some schools are beginning to do HNCs and HNDs, things that colleges have done in the past. There's other ways you can enrich your curriculum, both at that National 4, National 5 level, but also other levels. It doesn't have to be about advanced hires and things anymore. I could speak a little too about how learners are accessing massive online courses and all these other bits and pieces. In terms of all the open stuff, open education resources and online things, I think schools are still digitally divided. I spoke to my first year daughter before I came along tonight, and I said, look, and this was without me feeding any lines, and I said, look, if there was one piece of advice I could give everybody at something like this, what would it be? And she said, well, they've got to find a way to let us use the internet in class, either my phone or something like that. She says, I know that everybody doesn't have phones, I don't want anybody to be embarrassed, but we can use the school Wi-Fi, but we hardly ever get let to use that in class. So there's a massive digital divide going on just now. This closing the attainment gap. See, if you haven't got the internet, you can't even have conversations with other kids just now if you don't have all these bits and pieces. You're excluded. You know, back to the free swimming pool and the free libraries and all these kind of things. Free Wi-Fi and various other things. Schools need that. And if they haven't got a device, give them a browser. Find a way. You know, Amazon, what's the latest? Amazon Fire. £40 now. You know, I mean, I was saying that to somebody the other night there who was talking about, you know, their iPads and their do-do-do and all these other things. £40 buys you an amazing browser that you can watch. You can do lots of things on it. £40. You know, it's because Amazon wants to buy lots of books too. But £40 entry-level tablet. You know, schools need to do more in that space to close that digital gap. There's more change in the way too. And it's not been picked up. I saw it actually on my way on the train on the way through. I read the Herald and I breathed a sigh of relief that somebody in Scotland, and unfortunately somebody in Scotland from the opposite end of the political spectrum from me, has picked this up. The CBI have noticed there's a seismic change coming in the world of apprenticeships. Some of your employers might already have got wind of it. Somebody might have had some conversations about it. The industry training levy will impact on every employer in the UK that pays more than £3 million in staff wages. So that's most of your local authorities. It's all the colleges in Scotland. They'll pay a 0.5% levy on their salary bill, so it's effectively a tax. So in some ways, actually, some of the conversation we had around the table, people need to pay more tax. Actually, it might not be a bad thing. It's going to raise £3 billion across the UK. In England, they've already spelled out how employers will get access to the money. It's going to fundamentally change the relationship that employers have to work-based learning. Employers are going to have to put some money in to get some of their own money back. Employers will have training accounts. Large and small employers in England will want to get their money back. And in the case of small employers who don't have to pay the levy, they'll want to tap into the funding and training resource. I'm expecting there'll be a lot of changes in this space because of that. I'm expecting the CBI just finally started saying, so what's happening in Scotland? Because big employers in Scotland have to pay it. Yeah, they are. How are we going to get money back? I'm hoping that actually this will also change how employers react to schools and colleges, because they're going to start banging on your doors looking for apprentices and various other things, because that's the way they'll get the money back, by training people, by training the workforce. So it's not all bad, but it's a big change. So I hope, rather than provoked you, I've given you some food for thought. Thanks very much.
Scotland's young people literally in your hands, in the palm of your hands. And what I'm going to do this evening is talk to you about some real case examples of four young men who have slipped through your fingers. And I'm going to use them in very practical terms just to illustrate just some of the practical things that we're doing in Pullman's at the minute to try and create a learning environment, which is a whole establishment approach. And hopefully that will ring some bells for you this evening. And when we get to the panel, feel free to ask them what you like. The question that I was asked to address is really, you know, is it possible to increase attainment or to kind of deal with the achievement gap? And based on what I see of the potential of the young men in Pullman, and bear in mind that some of these young men are, despite their vulnerability, enormously resilient. If you had to cope with what they have to cope with in their lives, you know, you really do have to recognise the staying power of some of these youngsters. So is it possible? It's possible if what you see as being achieving, you know, improving attainment is about helping every young person to realise more potential than they ever believed they have, then absolutely it's possible. It's absolutely possible. But if what you mean by that is you want to get every young person to do advanced higher and go to university, then it's not. And arguably, if you focus on that to the exclusion of other things, there will always be a large proportion of young people in your schools who will think that you do not value them and that they are somehow second best. Actually, you're putting my children through advanced hires today and limiting maths, so I do understand the desire for doing other things. But there is a wealth of potential within the young men in Pullman. So the first young gentleman I'm going to talk to you about today is really, I suppose, at the kind of starting point, the most acute end in our system. Let's call him Robert. He epitomises some of the very acute mental health learning difficulty and trauma issues in my population. He was admitted in the last week, and he has a maturity developed at an age of around 5 years old. Whichever member of the justiciary thought it would be a good idea to send him to prison, you know, really needs to have some input about education. So there's a task for you. You know, get hold of the justiciary and talk to them about education. He assaulted his carer. He has very intense psychiatric and mental health needs, extremely difficult relationships with both his mum and his grandmother. He wets himself on occasion, and the staff at the minute who are working with him, bear in mind prison officers do not have as yet, and we'll come to that, intensive experience of working with young people particularly. So they're at the minute trying to get hold of DVDs with cartoons and age-appropriate reading material from the parenting area, and doing all sorts of innovative and creative things to try and keep this young man stable. So this is a real example. Pullman has young men aged 16 to 23. So in terms of raising levels of attainment, the starting point for us is always at the very kind of acute end, and just trying to stabilise young people on arrival. And some of them are really pretty traumatised when they come to us. Their needs, and you will see this in your own school populations, acute mental health, alcohol particularly, they all drink heavily, school exclusion, more than 90% of them. Poland is like a big school inclusion unit, right? So if you haven't got one of them, then you should have, and we'll talk about that later. They've been in care, they've usually left their family, been through various different care experiences, and every time they've moved on, there has been a disjointed relationship, and they believe that nobody cares about them enough to hang on to them. Huge amount of trauma. Recent piece of research, more than 90% of the young men in Poland had had significant bereavements. The average was 5 bereavements each, and really acute sets of circumstances. So, you know, you probably knew bereavement was an issue, but the volume and intensity of that is really, really significant. Obviously, there have been witnesses to domestic abuse, generally, and a wide range of learning differences, difficulties, disabilities, depending upon which discipline you come from. So one of the things that we've been doing to kind of get people ready to learn is about a whole range of intensive trauma supports. So we've got a here, what we call Here and Now service, which is bereavement counselling from Barnardo's, art therapy. We use Open Secret for sexual abuse. We have Women's Aid in, which has been really, really, really interesting, to do some educational work with young men about domestic abuse and what that's about and positive relationships. And a huge number, the volume of youngsters now saying, I need some help with this or I'm going to be in that position soon is massive. We also do things like Seasons of Growth that I know you do and various other things. So trauma and dealing with trauma and attachment in positioning people to raise level of attainment is significant. We've opened what we call the health and wellbeing area. So every youngster who comes in gets quite a lot of support around health promotion from the NHS and our own staff team. Some of our recent kind of survey data shows an increase in health and wellbeing indicators. And I think we're in the running. I think we've been shortlisted in the last three for Education Scotland award for that. And I hear the kind of aghast issues about Education Scotland. So I appreciate they inspect you, but for me, they're a friend. We've partnered up with Education Scotland to help us learn about the educational environment and context, and that's been hugely valuable. And we also, in terms of addressing these very acute needs, although, as I said earlier, Poland is like a big inclusion unit, even within our population of around 500 young men, we have a group of probably around 50 who are at the really acute, disengaged end of the spectrum. And so we've opened two of our own inclusion units where we do intensive one-to-one support, and they've been hugely helpful. There are lots of reasons why youngsters find it difficult to engage in Poland. Sometimes they're frightened, they're bullied. You know, they don't want to work in groups, they have intense learning difficulties, they can't concentrate, all sorts of reasons. So being able to work with them on a one-to-one basis is key. And a key component of that, when you ask the boys in the inclusion unit, what is it that makes that a success for you? They will say, the staff here don't judge me, nobody judges me. That was the biggest indicator for them. So that's the first issue. The second case study is about the importance of family, and I know schools, you know, throughout Scotland are trying to do a lot more to engage parents. This is a young man, let's call him David. I met him in the corridor the other day. We have a huge long corridor as you walk into the prison, and the big carpet, and he happened to be on the industrial cleaning party, and he was hoovering the carpet. And as I came up to him, he said, he was a governor, aren't you? And I said, yes. And he said, do you want to help me hoover this carpet? Not, I didn't really have that in mind. David had he has some learning difficulty issues. In the course of that conversation, he said to me, I'm coming up to release soon, but I don't really want to go out. Could you keep me here and just train me some more? So I said to David, well, you know, what we really need to do is get you ready for going out and help you feel safe to go out, and, you know, maybe get you an opportunity to go to college or to get a job, and how would you feel about that? And he said, yeah, that all sounds really good, and I am getting some qualifications at the minute, but my family is absolutely chaotic, and I don't want to go back to that again. So dealing with family issues is a core component of what we do. We offer lots of intensive family support, so we have the family bus, we have family contact officers, We also have a parenting area, because our equivalent of early intervention is to help these lads be good dads, because the next generation of children are something like 4 times more likely to end up in prison themselves if their parent has been there. So we have had empathy bellies and electronic babies and all sorts of things going on. We talked about fetal alcohol syndrome. We engage in storytelling, all sorts of stuff in the parenting area, and that's run by prison officers who are supported by Barnardo's in terms of their CPD. So it's a fascinating piece of work, and really, really instructive. One of the things that we do as part of that course is that when I was young, primary school teachers, we'd lie on the floor and someone would draw around you. Yes. So they do that as part of the course. Inside the body, they write all the things that their dad said to them. And outside it, they write the kind of dad that they want to be. And if you see that up on the wall, it really is enough to make you greet. The kind of relationship that they had with their fathers is absolutely... It's not until you really see it in those very graphic terms you realise just how shocking it is. So anything that you can do to help young men... Focus on young men in terms of positive relationships, parenting, the importance of being a good dad is absolutely critical. And when I went to Parliament, people said to me, well, really, you know, we don't need to do a lot about this because they're quite young and they don't really have any kids yet. And I said, well, when they get out of here, they're going to be trying. Yes. I think now is the time to get ahead of the game and think... preventative. So parenting, big issue. In the school my daughters go to, it's voluntary. I think it kind of should be a bit compulsory, but there you go. Maybe you can't do that. One of the kind of things to do around families, we have a life skills area, and one of the biggest issues for us is trying to make sure that we practice these issues throughout the establishment. So, you know, I have activity areas which are beautiful and redeveloped and look like a college area, but the lads live in the halls, and that for me is the equivalent between parenting and going to school. Right? So I talk to my staff who work in the halls and say to them, you are a corporate parent. What that means is you are having to teach young people when they're living in these areas life skills. So you might think that you're just getting them up in the morning to have their showers or go to exercise, but what you're actually doing is you're helping them develop life skills in relation to timekeeping, and personal hygiene, and organisation, and social skills, and all of these other things. So we have a lot of work to do around developing that area. And in addition to that, there are all sorts of learning difficulty issues as well. So we have speech and language therapy resources, and we've been using a tool called the Do-It tool, which is a computerised assessment tool as well, so that we can get a clearer look at the nature of the learning difficulties within the population. So, you know, up until now, I've had just 2 case studies. I appreciate it's maybe not what you think of as attainment, but for us, we have to start to get a platform where these boys can be positioned so that they feel safe, that they feel that someone's interested in them and that they can actually cope before you even get them into education. And we have a spectrum, if you like, of education resources, from speech and language therapy to the inclusion areas to youth work to Fife College, you know, and all of these things interconnect as we go. This making sense so far, is it? Good, that's fine. So now we're at the stage then of trying to maybe kind of motivate them to raise their levels of attainment further. And my third case study really, I suppose, is about engaging the disengaged. And let's call this lad Craig. So Craig engaged with the community safety unit. So we have an area called community safety unit which has a campus cop in it. My daughter's school had a campus cop, and so I contacted Police Scotland and said, why don't I have one? And so we do now have one. He's called Hamish. It's not Hamish and Beth, which is it's disappointing. So they run the domestic kind of violence awareness sessions with Women's Aid, and he got involved in that. He needed support for anger issues, for anxiety issues, for shame, for substance misuse, for sleep management. He had an enormously turbulent past and a series of bereavements. So you know, you will often get young men who will say to you, and this is very common, I know it sounds extreme, you know, I saw my dad stabbed in the street, my mum was an alcoholic and then she died, my gran was looking after us, and you know, she kept really poor health and then she passed away. I've got five brothers, I'm in here and one of my other brothers is in here, and I'm trying to improve sins to stop my mother, my other brothers coming in as well. That's really, really common, so we'll come back to that issue. Craig spoke about, he was directed to the Here and Now service, which is the kind of bereavement counselling service, and he spoke about previous suicide attempts and other bereavements in his life. He was motivated to make life changes, engage in activity, he had a clearer vision of his future. He wanted to give back to others what he'd learned, so he engaged him in the peer support hub, and he's now working towards a counselling certificate. And he says, I just believe in myself more than I did previously. So we, 3 years ago, we kind of buddied up with Education Scotland and we did a complete review of the curriculum base for the establishment. And what that told us was that whilst we actually had very high quality vocational areas, probably further ahead than school system is in many respects in terms of, you know, the kind of developing the young workforce apprenticeship side of things, we didn't have a lot of softer skills areas, the kind of social citizenship areas, so we've really, really focused on that. So areas like the Community Safety Unit, where we run the leadership course with Police Scotland, the peer support area, so we're developing young men to support others and move them through the establishment. We set up a performance arts theatre area, which is entertaining. We have a section called Pause for Progress, where the boys work with a charity to rehome dogs. So the dogs come in, they train them, they learn all sorts of important skills. It's one of the few areas in a prison environment where you can get issue about nurture, actually, and affection, and issues that's really, really useful. And we do all sorts of what we call integrated and embedded learning. So we don't have them sitting in a classroom doing maths, because I hated that. So we have teachers who go into the joinery area, and we teach them by stealth, right? So while they're not looking and they're doing joinery, we tell them that they've got qualifications in literacy and numeracy. That seems to work. But we also integrate our subject areas. So there are, so, you know, you can do all sorts of things by joining the dots between parenting and life skills and performance arts and community safety. All sorts of ways to join it up. And we do our equivalent of street work. So for those boys who won't come out of the halls, we send the teachers and our youth work teams to go and get them. Right? So it's the equivalent of youth work in the activities areas, street work in the halls. Our youth work team recently won the Youth Link Team of the Year award, which was super. What else have we done? We do bucket loads of qualities work. We recently ran the whole Holocaust Memorial Day and recently opened an employability area, because at the minute they kind of get the way through that educational spectrum and then they fall off the end before we can get them into training and employment. So we have won money to work with a third sector organisation to develop employability issues and try and catch them before they fall. The digital divide is an interesting thing. The digital divide for us means that because of security reasons, no young person in Poland has access to the internet. Right? So if you imagine how difficult it is to teach in the kind of current environment, modern, up-to-date, entertaining subject matter, that's very tricky. We have to be really quite creative about that. And the last case study I've got is a positive one, I suppose. It's where you can get to with some of these youngsters. Let's call this lad Callum. Callum was employed, so he was in one of the services. He was just a perfectly ordinary lad. He was on a night out with some of his pals. He drank too much. They encountered a drunk man who aggravated them. He punched him once. The man fell, banged his head and died. No previous experience of being in custody or in trouble at all. This young man has a 2-year-old daughter, so he enrolled in the parenting course and then he became a mentor, because in each of the work areas we try and get one of the youngsters to become a mentor and then they support others within that area to develop. He's won an education award, he's got himself involved in community access, and he paid for an engineering course at Glasgow College. And what's interesting about this is he was told by the college that, unfortunately, he's not liberated for a while yet, that they couldn't give him an interview and he missed the start date. So my tenacious deputy governor phoned the college up and said, we think we'd like you to come and hear an interview and give this lad a fair opportunity. And they duly did that, and he's now won a college place. Now, the reason that I've called this young man Callum is because I have a son who is 23 and he's called Callum. And, you know, those of you in the audience with sons who go out drinking, you know, he could be your son. That's the way I run my establishment. I have 500 young men. I'm responsible for them. I encourage the staff to see them as their own kids. I would want my son and my daughters to be treated well if they ended up in custody. That's just the way it is. So in closure, in terms of raising levels of aspiration, a lot of these young men do not believe they're capable of anything. When you ask them, what would you like to do when you leave? They'll say, I'm going to get a job with Moncal, doing a bit of labouring. When you say to them, what do you dream of being? You know, when you go to bed at night and you let them, you think, what do you really dream you would like to do? They'll tell you something completely different. But they have no self-belief at all. So trying to get that stretch in their self-belief and understanding of what they're capable of is hugely important. And so I talked to the staff about inspiration, aspiration and celebration, and we do a huge amount of celebration in the establishment for sometimes the smallest things but the critical issues. We've done bucket loads of staff development, we've done child development, the adolescent brain, learning difficulties, bereavement and trauma, you know, because most of my staff were at an absolute standing start in relation to these things. And to ask them to engage these very traumatised young men in developing without any underpinning knowledge, I think, is absolutely tragic. And you know, next stages for us really is about reflective practice and trying to build that kind of continuous professional development. And now we're over time. Okay, right. Here's the things that you can do to stop them slipping through your fingers. Right? Please, please concentrate on bereavement. A lot of young men will say, someone asked me about it once when it happened and then nobody came back. Now, you need to go back and ask them again and again and again and again. You know which families will not cope well with bereavement. Work it out. Right? If they lose someone, target them. Don't exclude them. If you haven't got an inclusion unit, you should have one, but how it works. Positive relationships for boys. Please, please, please. And I know that there is a perfectly understandable focus about domestic abuse on women who have been victims of domestic abuse. If you want to stop it, you have to start with the boys. I just think that's sensible. And if you do it in a way which encourages them to think of themselves not as perpetrators, but as young men who have also been horrendously victimised by witnessing this, then you will give them the opportunity to talk about it. Parenting, parenting, parenting. Otherwise, the next generation are coming into Bellini, Glenoak, Concord, Vale, and Pullmont. Someone mentioned holidays. I don't want to get into that debate, except to say, when you're all on holiday, these kids aren't. Holidays are not a holiday for them. They don't get fed, they don't get looked after, and they don't cope. So you need to put in other structures during those periods to help them deal with these issues. And just lastly, just a wee plea about modern studies. Only today, right, this was actually a parent, but I get modern studies teachers who do this as well. I had a father phone the establishment, desperate, bless him, has a 14-year-old son, wanted me to scare his son into not coming to Poland, and could he bring him in so that I could scare him and show him inside the room. I have tried that with my own kids actually, and it works really well, but it's not great. So, you know, I often get modern studies teachers asking me, and you'll get kids writing in saying, can you tell me how many riots have happened in prison? That's not what we do, right? Please, you know, we need to get some of these materials up to date, because I want to recruit good people to work with these very vulnerable youngsters as well. Okay, me?